from the beginning of the ministry of Jesus to the end of it, he referred to his hour constantly. When God would glorify the Son, and the Son would glorify God. Chapters 18 and 19 of the Gospel according to John show that hour. We have read the first 17 chapters of the Gospel according to John, and we've heard him make all those references. And we have seen and heard many things. Finally, we're going to look this morning, tonight, and then 2 weeks from now at the last hour of Jesus. Are you ready for what we shall now see? John begins this section in chapter 18, verses 1 and 2, with these words. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place. For Jesus often met there with his disciples. Jesus at this point had already said all that needed to be said to his disciples for that day, that night. That was the content of chapters 13 through 17, or 16. And he said all that needed to be said to his Father. That was the contents of chapter 17. And with nothing else to say to anyone, he continued his journey to a place where he often resorted with his disciples. He went with them over the brook Kidron on the east side of Jerusalem, and they entered a garden, which we know as the Garden of Gethsemane. But someone else also knew the garden because he often went there with Jesus. But this man was no longer with Jesus, either in person or in spirit. And Jesus knew that this man knew Jesus would go there. The man was Judas Iscariot. We saw him leave Jesus and the disciples back in chapter 13, and Jesus revealed to John, Peter, and us that Judas left to betray Jesus. Jesus intentionally went to a place that Judas knew, and where Jesus knew Judas would bring people, but not to hear the great teacher. They had something else in mind. Verse 3. But Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Judas, who had not been known for violence, covetousness, yes, but not harmful behavior toward others, went to the garden. Yet covetousness and greed can turn a person of peace into a violent one. I believe that 1 Timothy chapter 6 shows us what happens to anyone regardless of who that person is, who has covetousness or greed in the heart. And Judas certainly fit these two verses from 1 Timothy 6, 9 and 10. Paul wrote, "But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." Oh, Judas, look what you did for a measly 30 pieces of silver. Judas also knew that Jesus had not been known for violence, but that he was a man of peace. Nevertheless, the betrayer brought with him troops, men prepared for combat, officers from the highest Jewish authorities, plenty of light, and weapons, anticipating an armed struggle. And a brief struggle would ensue, but the man of peace stopped it. And it wasn't Judas who attempted to stop it. Greed so clouded the thinking of Judas that he didn't even realize how he was approaching Jesus. A man of peace and innocence. Yet Judas also knew the popularity of Jesus and probably anticipated heavy resistance from his followers. Next, John wrote verses 4 through 11, back in John 18. "Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, 'Whom are you seeking?' They answered him, 'Jesus of Nazareth.' Jesus said to them, 'I am he.' And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now when he said to them, 'I am he,' they drew back and fell to the ground. Then he asked them again, 'Whom are you seeking?' And they said, 'Jesus of Nazareth.' Jesus answered, 'I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which you spoke, of those whom you gave me, I have lost none.' Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, 'Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?' This was the hour of Jesus. He could not avoid it. If you look at your handouts, those of you that have them, you'll see I've given a list of several passages from the Gospel according to John where Jesus made reference to this hour, to this very time. And these are just the ones that John recorded. In chapter 2 and verse 4, he had said to his own mother, 'Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come.' In chapter 7, verse 30 of John, John wrote, 'Therefore they sought to take him, but no one laid a hand on him, because his hour had not yet come.' And here, they did lay a hand on him, because it was his hour. Chapter 8, verse 20. These words Jesus spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no one laid hands on him, for his hour had not yet come. Chapter 12, verse 23. But Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified." Verse 27. "Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? But for this purpose I came to this hour." Chapter 13, that last night, the night in which chapter 18 is happening. Chapter 13, verse 1. John wrote, "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end." And then chapter 17, verse 1, which we looked at last week. Jesus spoke these words, lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, "Father, the hour has come. Glorify your Son, that your Son also may glorify you." He knew, therefore, that he could not and should not avoid this hour. Therefore, he did not walk away from it, as he could have done. But he walked, literally walked to it. Walked to the garden, and then when he knew the arresting people were coming, he went right out to them. He was walking right to death, and he knew it. When he asked them who they saw, they told him, "Jesus of Nazareth." He boldly declared, "I am he." And then John noted at that point that Judas was right there with him. Judas could confirm, "Yes, this is the man." When Jesus, without fear, confessed his identity, the troops literally went backwards and fell to the ground. They could not handle, I believe, such valor. I mean, think about how they approached him. They knew what he saw. Troops, army troops, authorities, and weapons. And this guy comes right out to us and confronts us and says, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." "I'm the one." No fear. And his boldness was so powerful, it literally knocked them to the ground. And then guess who restarted the whole thing? Not Judas. Not the officers. Not the troops, who should have feared nothing. It was Jesus. He repeated his question. And when they repeated whom they sought, he continued to show courage, as is revealed in verse 8, saying that "I've told you that I'm he, and that if you're seeking me, let these go." His 11 disciples who were with him at that point. And then John reveals that even that statement in verse 8 was a fulfillment of prophecy. Because Jesus would not lose any of the ones whom God had given to him. "Okay, Peter, now is the time to back up your promise of loyalty, whether by going to jail or dying with Jesus. Those are the two things you promised to do, Peter." Well, Peter didn't go stand with the Lord to suffer whatever the Lord suffered, but Peter went on the attack, something he never promised to do. Probably going after the closest man, who was Malchus, a servant of the high priest, and Peter tried to decapitate him. He pulled out a sword and with a wild swing, just tried to cut his head, and Malchus ducked, and there goes his ear. And the true man of peace rebuked Peter, telling him to sheath his sword. Because Jesus had to drink the cup that the Father had given him to drink. "Don't you understand yet, Peter? I've been telling you about my hour." Jesus went to meet death, and nothing, not even a loving and loyal disciple, could prevent it. So John reveals next in verses 12 through 14 that this happened. Then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. With the situation now calmed, the troops, the captain, and the Jewish officers arrested and bound Jesus. The wicked creature arrested and bound the holy creator. Did you see what happened here? Unbelievable. From the Garden of Gethsemane, they took Jesus to Annas first, the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest for that year, doing so out of respect for Annas. We have heard from Caiaphas before, back in chapter 11. As the Jews were plotting to kill Jesus, suddenly, Caiaphas spoke and said something, though he did not say it of his own accord, but the Spirit moved him to speak, just like Balaam's donkey, to say something he knew nothing about. Showing that God was right there among the conspirators, hearing what they're saying, and then God for a moment takes control of the conversation. Look back at chapter 11, and I'll show you what happened there. John 11, 49 through 52. Okay, so this is the high priest and the Pharisees, they're all meeting in secret, and then verse 49 says this, and one of them, Caiaphas, being high priest that year, in other words, that's the reason God chose him, said to them, you know nothing at all. Nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people and not that the whole nation should perish. Now here's John's commentary. Now this he did not say on his own authority. But being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation. And not for that nation only, but also that he would gather together in one the children of God who were scattered abroad. That's the man before whom now Jesus has been brought. Let's see what's going on with Peter, 15 through 18. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, went out and spoke to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, you are not also one of this man's disciples, are you? He said, I am not. Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. And Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Well, Peter did put away his sword, and he didn't run away. Rather, he followed Jesus and the arresting troops, and another disciple accompanied Peter, whom we believe to be John, the writer of this gospel account. Once they arrived at the courtyard of the high priest, this other disciple got inside because he had connections. You know, it's always nice when you have connections. He had connections with the high priest. But that means Peter had to wait outside until that other disciple approached the girl who kept the door, and he talked to her, letting her know it's okay to let him in. And she let him in. So far, Peter seemed to be keeping his promise of loyalty, at least attempting to do so. Suddenly, as Peter walked by this girl, she asked whether he was a disciple of Christ. using the word also, perhaps she knew that this other disciple, again, we believe it was John, that he was a disciple. Then it happened. Peter said that he was not a disciple of Christ. Less than an hour before, he had made his bold promise of loyalty to go to jail with Jesus or to die. Well, you know, perhaps Peter was caught off guard. You've been caught off guard. I know I have. I knew the right thing, and I just wasn't expecting it. Where did it come from? You know, from my blind side. And boom, you did something or that you shouldn't have done, or you failed to do something that you should have done. But then he had a chance to think about what he had just done as he went and joined these other people by the fire to warm himself. Oh, Peter, please. I root for Peter. In fact, I root for Pilate, too, when we get to him. Every time, even though I know it's already happened and I know what's going to happen, I always think, come on, Peter. Come on, Pilate. Do the right thing. You know it. Peter, redeem yourself quickly. Let's go back to Jesus to see what happened next. 19 through 24. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus answered him, I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple, where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. The high priest questioned Jesus, the Son of God, about two things. Number one, his disciples, and number two, his doctrine. Why did the priest want to know those things? Well, he had to make it look like he's investigating, like he's conducting a trial, to make it look legitimate. Of course, it was all a charade. It was a banana court, kangaroo court. I knew I didn't say that right. Without fear or favor, Jesus confessed that he had taught publicly and did not try to teach insurrectionist things. Therefore, he deferred the high priest to question those who had heard Jesus. They would be able to tell the high priest what he wanted to know if he really wanted to know it. And one of the officers saw that as being sarcastic. So he slapped Jesus, questioning his manner of speaking to the high priest. And we, on the other hand, rebuke that officer for slapping the true high priest. I hope that that officer who's talked about there in verse 22, oh, I hope that that he repented on the day of Pentecost. You know, 51 days later, Peter preached to about 3,000, or not 3,000, more than that, thousands of Jews about what had happened this day. And many of them repented. I hope it was this man. I mean, look at verses 22 to 24. And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, slapping him. Do you answer the high priest like that? Jesus answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me? Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. If that officer never repented, don't even try to imagine the horror for him on the day of judgment when he stands before the judgment seat of Christ, the judge of all the earth, the high priest of heaven and earth, and has to explain to him why he slapped him when they were both down on the earth. Can you imagine? No, don't try to imagine, Lord. I think it's too awful. Oh. Wow. Jesus did not strike the man back. Jesus did not even curse him. Jesus simply offered two options. First, reveal the evil that he had spoken. Or second, reveal why he hit the man if Jesus hadn't spoken evil. And the officer said nothing. What could he say? When they were done, they took Jesus to the functioning high priest, the one the Romans recognized, Caiaphas. What did Peter do while they questioned and slapped his master and teacher? Let's find out. 25 to 27. Now, Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore, they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it and said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter then denied again. And immediately, a rooster crowed. Peter did nothing but warm himself. As they were abusing his friend. Those with whom he stood questioned whether he followed Christ. And evidently, Peter had not repented of what he said earlier and denied Jesus a second time. A relative of Malchus, who certainly knew the man who cut off the ear of his relative, questioned whether he saw Peter in the garden with Jesus. Then it happened. Number three. Peter denied Jesus a third time. And even that fulfilled prophecy. Because Jesus had prophesied that on that very night, Peter would deny the Lord three times. And Peter broke his own promise of loyalty. Without delay, Peter heard the unmistakable blast of a rooster crowing. Oh, but let us be slow to judge Peter. Because I think we all could say that we know in our own hearts that we have denied knowing the Lord before others. And if not, we know we've committed other sin. Now, that doesn't play down sin, but let it move us to be compassionate toward others, even as we want others to be compassionate toward us, and as Jesus was later compassionate toward Peter. They tried our Lord and Master with no one to defend. Within the halls of Pilate, he stood without a friend. Will you be a friend to Jesus? Your life for Him will you spend? Will you be a friend to Jesus until your years shall end? If you say yes, good. Don't delay anymore. We're going to sing an invitation song. And if you're ready to stand with Jesus and be His friend, He receives you, we receive you, we'll baptize you into Christ this very morning. Come forward now as we stand and sing.